Hey, Corey here. We've had an influx of new listeners, and so I just want to make sure that if you are new to the podcast, you don't just jump in and start listening to these daily episodes, which we've been doing. Please go back and listen to the first at least 8 episodes so you have an idea of what Collapse is, what it is that Corey is talking about. Also, if you've been with us for a while and you're enjoying the content, please join us on Patreon. We would love to see you there. There's a link, as always, in the description. All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I hope you had a good couple of days break for the holiday. Merry Christmas to those who celebrate. Happy Hanukkah to those who celebrate. And I'm not going to name the couple dozen other holidays around this time of year. I have a very special person with me today. Would you like to say hello?
Oh, hello.
So great to hear that voice again. I know I'm not the only one that thinks so. There was tons of people on the Patreon that were like super excited for they were begging for you to come back and do another episode. And I said, well, fate allows, but Kellen said he wants to come back and do one more. So
I was dictated by fate. I think you're just trying to flatter me.
You read the messages.
I saw some of the well wishes. I saw some individuals who had said some kind things and said, I hope you're doing well. So I appreciate that.
Did you not read the ones that said, we wish that Corey had left and you had stayed?
There were none of
them. It really is good. I mean, it's been like a year and a number of months since you last did an episode.
Yeah, it had been a long time. And I told you just before we started recording that I actually felt really nervous.
You feel a little rusty?
Yeah. I'm not used to this. And my wife often asks me, do you miss it? And I do. I miss it quite a bit.
We don't believe you. Me and the several thousand listeners don't believe you.
You speak for all of them.
Just kidding. No, though, this is going to be a fun one. It'll probably be a little bit longer, and I'm guessing we're going to cut it into a couple of parts just to try and keep the episode lengths down to a little bit more what they have been as of late. But I guess it'll just depend on, how long we end up going here. Purpose of today's episode, we're going to talk about the year 2025 and do a recap of what's happened in the world of Collapse. We have a tradition of doing these every year. We've done it since we started in 2020. I think last year I did it alone, but at the very least, Kellen, depending on your life and your priorities, maybe you'll join us for some in between. And at the very least, let's hope that you're here at the end of every year to talk about what's happened. Have you been on the internet at all in 2025? I know I recently made as I was, okay. Let's okay. So I was on vacation a week ago, right? And so during that week, I just replayed the first 8 episodes. Each day, I just played one of the old episodes. And then when I came back, I started going through and doing a sort of meta conversation about each episode, how I felt about it, some of the interactions that you and I had around the start of the podcast and like how it went for us and those types of things. And so anyway, in talking about one of those, I made the joke about how you're chronically offline. And so I am genuinely curious, do you know the stuff that, like, when you did the research for this episode, was this all new to you, or?
I am much less aware than I used to be, which in some ways is actually a really good thing.
Totally.
It's been kind of nice.
Yeah.
And I think I still believe that Collapse is happening and will continue to happen.
You just don't care.
It's all about me just taking care of myself.
You're just leaving the burden on the rest of us.
No, I don't feel as pessimistic as I did before. Meaning, like, I still think we're in the middle of Collapse. I think there's plenty of evidence for that. But I think when we were having these conversations previously and I was doing all the research that I always felt like something big was imminent.
Like right around the corner.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Like there was going to be a big step down, some really intense event. And like, I'm sure those will come along, but now I just kind of feel like, things will keep just gradually, slowly, in this direction that they already are.
I'll remind you of the very first episode where I told you that it's a boring dystopia.
Yeah. I think I would have said something similar then as I am now.
Sure.
But I think when you're like, reading these articles all the time, and it's what your mind is thinking about. It's what you think about while you're going to sleep. Like maybe you're reading through what people are saying about it online. It just feels like, oh man, like nobody has any clue that this is really, really bad. And I think now I feel like, yeah, most people don't think it's going to get better. And I don't know. I guess my mind has shifted a little bit in, I think, a somewhat healthier way.
Good.
But there's also a part of me that has that almost like a FOMO feeling around, like I'm not as tuned in. I wonder what's going on, if there are certain things that I'm not aware of, and I don't want to be one of those people that's caught unaware.
Sure. I think we could all do with a little unplugging. I've talked about that a little bit in some of these daily episodes where it's like, I'm not eat, drink, sleeping, collapse. I'm really not. Perhaps the daily episodes now give me a little bit more of a frequent outlet to kind of like, okay, I'm doing my recording. This is my half an hour of the day where I do my collapse and then I'm not collapsing the rest of the day, you know, like, but that said, it does, like, it is a daily reminder that things are rough. I am daily reading articles, doing research, and, you know, listeners of the podcast, I don't know if everyone's listening every day or if people are just picking and choosing the titles that they find interesting. Looking at the stats, the number stays relatively flat, which makes me think the same people are tuning in every day, more or less. So anyway, that's just to say that if you're listening to this, you're probably listening about every day as well. So anyway, I would be curious to hear, you know, from listeners if they feel similarly, like, is the daily short episode, does it keep you too locked in? Do you feel kind of the way that Kellen described, where it's like you're always feeling like something big is going to happen? Or do you feel more like I do, where it's almost just a daily, like, get it out of my system and then move on to something else the rest of the day? I don't have to feel FOMO, because I feel like if there was something big, you know, maybe the listener's thinking Corey would talk about it if there was something like huge happening that I needed to know about. But at the same time, I don't have to go out of my way to go do research and, you know, bother my whole day doom scrolling trying to figure out what's going on, because I can just do that 15-minute listen to the episode and go on to the next thing. Anyway, that's kind of the purpose of the daily episodes, and hopefully it's serving that purpose.
Yeah, and I think it is really good. Like, the information that you provide and the discussions that you're having are very valuable. I think maybe previously the way that we were doing the podcast episodes was we felt the need to do so much research and come prepared to have like a lengthy discussion and be very informed in that. So I felt like almost every minute of the day that I wasn't working, I was like checking on articles and I was trying to keep everything top of mind.
Totally.
So the new format that you've adopted probably is much healthier.
I hope so. I don't know. I feel good. I don't know about I don't know how the listeners feel. Maybe they're all stress balls. All right. Well, let's talk about 2025. Kellen took a couple of topics. I took a couple of topics, basically just categories. That's kind of how we normally do this. So maybe I'll start, because I think I took three and you took two, more or less.
Oh, you're so much better than me.
I asked you what you wanted to take and you gave me two. So I picked the other three. This way I'll start and I'll end, instead of there being this weird thing where you start and then I do two at the end. Okay, so to start, let's talk about natural disasters that occurred this year.
Yeah, that's one of the things I miss.
Natural disasters?
Getting to talk about natural disasters.
Kellen's like, oh, I'm remembering why I don't do this anymore. All right. So this year was interesting in a lot of ways. You know, in the U.S., for example, we didn't have a single hurricane that made landfall. It's like a very low year for hurricanes in the U.S. There were still some serious Atlantic hurricanes that did a lot of damage, like in Jamaica, Hurricane Melissa.
Probably means that, like, things are just getting a lot better.
Yeah, no, what it actually means is that the Democrats did control the weather.
Ah.
And now that Trump is in power, he's fixed it.
He's doing everything he promised.
You know, I'm really surprised that we haven't seen that being said a lot, actually, because before, like in 2024 and 2023, that was a really common, like, Marjorie Taylor Greene and others were constantly talking about how the Democrats control the weather, the government controls the weather, and blah, blah, blah. And now that there were no hurricanes that made landfall this year, and hopefully I'm not wrong with that stat. If I am, I'm sorry, but I'm pretty sure there weren't. Why are they not being like, oh, President Trump, like, thank you?
I'm sure he would tell you that he's ending wars and he's ending natural disasters.
He prevented eight wars or ended eight wars and eight hurricanes that would have made landfall. So Hurricane Melissa, that was a big one in the Atlantic. It made landfall in Jamaica, and it affected over 1.5 million people, 185-mile-per-hour winds at the peak, and was pretty devastating. Other parts of the world also experienced cyclones. Southeast Asia, there were a couple different floods. One was called Senyar, and one was Ditwa. They led to...
Wait, say that again?
Ditwa? I don't know. I think half of the podcast is me saying, sorry if I pronounced that wrong, because I don't know how to pronounce stuff. They hit Sri Lanka, Indonesia, Malaysia, and Thailand towards the end of this year. Tons of flooding and landslides, and caused over 1,200 deaths from those two storms, which is wild. In Indonesia, there was some major flooding, and it created landslides that killed 1,000 people. It displaced more than 1 million people. Get this one. This one's wild to me. In Vietnam, there was record rainfall, which caused severe flooding. In 24 hours, it rained 1,739.6 millimeters.
Is that a lot?
For anyone not in the U.S., they would probably say, yeah, that's a lot. If you're in the U.S., I might say it's 68.5 inches, nearly 6 feet of rain in 24 hours.
Isn't it just ludicrous? Some of the... Earlier when you were talking about a hurricane and you said 185 miles per hour, mm-hmm. some of that wind at its peak, I was trying to imagine what that is like.
Totally.
I don't even know the top wind speeds that I've been in, but even if it's like, what, 20, 30 mile per hour wind, like it is, feel very strong. And sort of think yeah. 185 mile per hour wind, the kind of destruction that can cause. And then you talk about nearly, what, 6 feet?
Almost, yeah.
A rainfall in how much time?
24 hours, one day.
In 24 hours. Like, how does anyone get through that?
So we've had some wind gusts here where we live that have got to like 70 miles per hour or so. And it causes a ton of destruction. We've had a few times that's happened, and it's trees all over the place. It's a major cleanup effort. So I've tried, you know, as a kid, I remember being outside when it was pretty gusty, probably a little less than that, 50 or 60. And the wind, you can lean into it completely, right? And it's just holding you up like Michael Jackson style leaning. 68.5 inches of rain. Kellen, that is me. That is my height.
You sure you want to divulge that?
I was going to say, and it's less height than you. In 24 hours, that is a record for the most rainfall on land in a 24-hour period ever recorded. It is second place for rainfall anywhere on the globe ever recorded. As one time in the Indian Ocean, there was, I think it was about 3.5 inches more than this. Caused widespread destruction and flooding, as you can imagine. But just to think that it could rain that much in that short of a time, and that's coming to more places, and that's going to come more frequently, right? While other places are experiencing extreme drought, that you got places like this where they're having extreme rain.
You know, it's all coming back to me now. You talked about that being a record. Pretty incredible record for rain. And a pretty incredible record for landfall rain. And it just reminded me that almost every episode that we ever recorded together, we would talk about a record that was set.
Mm-hmm.
So the word unprecedented comes to mind. I feel like that was one of the most common words we would use. And especially when talking about weather anomalies, like it was always record after record after record.
And, you know, records that we talked about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, have probably already been broken and will continue to be broken. Couple last items here. We had floods also in the Northwest. They're still ongoing at the time of this recording in Washington and Oregon. Just a ton of rain. One stat I saw said that there was 5 trillion gallons of rain over the course of a week. I don't know what to do with that number, but it feels like a lot of water. It's an atmospheric river. We saw this a couple years ago in California. It's happening again now. Who knows how long it will stick around, but it caused some levees to break in Washington.
Oh, I did see that. A whole area around Seattle needed to evacuate.
Yep, exactly. Yep. And it's funny because I hadn't really heard that much about it. I kind of like by chance saw it in a random part of CNN or whatever when I was scrolling through there. And it's kind of crazy that as these weather events continue to happen and they get more frequent and more wild, they just become less newsworthy. This is the type of thing, you know, a levee breaking and tens of thousands of people being evacuated, you know, that close to Seattle. It feels like that would have been 10 years ago, like a pretty breaking news event. And now it's like, unless you're living through it, you might not even know that it's happening.
Seems like that's the case across the board. Like with natural disasters, when you mention what happened in Vietnam or some of these hurricanes, I probably saw something about those, but I might not have. Like, we joke about how I'm unplugged from the internet, and it's true that I am, you know, compared to you. But like, I still probably check the news every day. And if you would have asked me what kind of extreme weather events had happened this year, I wouldn't have remembered any of those. And we've talked about this in the past with shootings, for example, and how like a mass shooting or a school shooting, something like that, it's still just as tragic as it used to be. But now, like, you hear about them and maybe you think about it, like maybe there's some attention put toward it, but for the most part, it's like, oh, there was another one. Oh, shoot.
Right.
That's too bad. Whereas in the past, when one of those would happen, it was like the whole nation in mourning for days or even weeks.
Yeah. I mean, we still talk about Columbine just as an example. That's notorious. How many hundreds of school shootings, of mass school shootings, have occurred since Columbine? And they're becoming so frequent and worse and all of that. That's like some of the ones that happened this year, we may not be talking about soon. Yeah, it's devastating. Southern California wildfires. Do you remember that?
From previous years.
So this year in Los Angeles, I mean, Los Angeles caught on fire. There was a Palisades fire. There was one, I can't remember the other name, that was just to the north of that happening at the same time. $40 billion in insured loss. It is the most, okay, it says one of the most expensive wildfire events ever recorded. Now, when we talk about like the cost of natural disasters and events, it's kind of hard to compare, because one of the easiest ways to compare is money and economic damage. That doesn't necessarily equate to the severity of the fire itself and to like a worsening of climate change. It's hard to say that climate change is getting worse because fires are costing more money. It could just be that more of the earth is covered in expensive homes and the price of homes is increasing. So therefore, you know,
you can have a smaller fire, but in a more populated area.
Exactly.
And it's going to do a lot more damage from a financial standpoint.
Exactly. So the number 40 billion isn't necessarily indicative of, you know, a worsening climate. But the fact that these fires happened where they did and how they did, because the area was so dry and all of that, was definitely more likely to occur because of climate change. And these fires are continuing to increase. Speaking of which, in Canada, this was a terrible year for fires in Canada. I'm just going to read a little bit from the CWFIS. This is the National Wildland Fire Situation Report from Canada. So this is a government report. According to the CWFIS, 6,127 fires have been recorded nationally in 2025, burning a total of 8.9 million hectares. For comparative purposes, the total number of fires and area burned last year, according to the Canadian National Fire Database, was 5,800 fires with 5.3 million hectares. And the 10-year average is 4 million hectares. So, like, we're talking about almost, not quite, almost double the amount of fires as average and as last year. It was big news if you were, you know, if you live in the Northeast, because the smoke was apparently just wild, you know, blanketed cities all throughout the Northeast, where a very large number of Americans and Canadians live.
This is one that I feel quite unaware. I think I heard about it, but not the severity. And probably because they don't have koalas in Canada.
Right. No polar bears were affected that we know of.
And I didn't see any images of cities that looked like Blade Runner.
No videos of people escaping the fires with like ash burning all around them and all that.
Yeah. If these fires really want attention, they should be more viral.
In terms of area burned, this year is the second highest recorded, exceeding the total recorded in 1989. So I think 1989 was the third, or was the second most, and this one overtook it by quite a bit, by almost 2 million or over 2 million hectares.
It's not a record. We don't care.
And that's just going back to that idea that, like, as climate change progresses and as these natural disasters become more and more common and we stop hearing about them, you know, you and I used to talk about how climate change people aren't going to really care about it until it affects them directly. And at some point, it probably will. You know, at some point, everyone's going to be affected because you're either in a climate change prone area or people who were in climate change prone areas are coming to where you are, right? You're going to be affected in some way, whether it be economically, whether it be from regulations, whether it be from the natural disaster or whatever it is happening to you, the migrations, the economy, whatever it is. So it's just sad that most people aren't going to think about it until it's literally on top of them, in their face, screaming at them. All right, your turn. Tag team.
All right. Thanks for tagging me in. Let's talk about the topic that is kind of the buzzword for the year, AI.
Nobody wants to hear about this.
And why is everyone talking about it all the time?
Let's hear it. I'm excited to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, it's been a really unprecedented year when it comes to this kind of technological advancement.
Wait, hang on. Every time I hear you say the word unprecedented, all I can think about is one of your raps. Like with the newscasters all starting it off by talking about how unprecedented it was.
Yeah.
We need another Kellen rap, I think.
I think the world would be grateful if that never happened.
I don't think that's true.
All right. So I'll share a few things that I found particularly interesting when reading through a number of articles. This one, I'll just read it verbatim. Boston Consulting Group projects that by 2030, again, we're now in 2026. So I used to hear 2030 and I'm like, wow, that's a ways out.
Yeah. I still think of it as like, oh yeah. So like 10 or 15 years or whatever, when I'm an old man.
Yeah. But we're talking about 4 years from now. Boston Consulting Group projects that by 2030, data center power demand will rise to between 100 and 130 gigawatts compared to 45 to 50 gigawatts today.
Wow.
So it will, according to these projections, it will either double or triple.
In 4 years.
In 4 years.
Wow. Good thing they're really good for the environment.
There's lots of government entities, you know, local, state, federal, but also a lot of corporations that are trying to get very creative about the way that they handle this need for energy. So there are a number of additional gas plants that are being constructed, a lot of smaller, they call modular nuclear reactors, and repurposed engines. There were some interesting things in there about like being able to repurpose jet engines.
Wow.
So yeah, repurposed aircraft engines, underwater facilities. But I found it interesting that more gas-fired plants are coming along to keep up with AI infrastructure.
Yeah, it's like at first they were like, yeah, don't worry, it's all going to be clean, renewable energy that, you know, is going to power these. And now they're like, burn the gas. I've also seen an article today about like communities revolting against this. I'm sorry if you're going to get to this, but like just a ton of protests sparking up even just in the last like week or two because people are not wanting these data centers in their backyards.
Oh, good. I'm sure that all that protesting will stop it.
Sally with her sign out on the road. Better than Sally not with her sign.
Yeah, I shouldn't be flipping. It's good to take a stand.
Yeah. But
it's hard to be optimistic that will change things.
Totally. Yeah, I think we should be out. I think we should raise our voices. We should complain about it. Will it change the direction? There's nothing that's going to stop these mega billion dollar corporations from getting what they want somewhere.
Yeah, soon you'll be saying $1 trillion corporation.
We're almost there.
All right, here's another statement. By 2030, over 8,000 data centers are expected globally, each mid-sized facility using about 1.4 million liters of water daily for cooling.
Wow.
And there were some other things in there just to summarize that water usage will increase as the climate gets hotter. And 45% of data centers are located in river basins where water availability is high risk.
Hmm. I had heard a stat like that, basically saying they're putting these data centers in areas where it's disproportionately going to affect or has the possibility to affect water availability and like water health for local ecosystems and local people, municipalities.
I mean, it makes sense. If you want to build a data center and you want to optimize for it, you would put it right where there's a good supply of fresh water.
Right.
But as we've talked about in the past, you know, water scarcity is an increased risk year over year. In fact, here's another statement from an article. In Phoenix, data centers could drive a 32% increase in annual water stress.
Wow.
But the use of energy, the use of water, that's not all. There was a coalition of U.S. attorneys general. They came together and made some complaints. They warned some of these major AI labs that their models are already violating state laws. So they claim things like that these AI models are endangering Americans, particularly children. And some of what they included in that complaint was that there have been inappropriate chats with minors. These AI models are practicing medicine without a license.
Yeah.
They're encouraging illegal action. And this is all reinforced by some other research that's been done. And I'm kind of jumping between a few articles right here, but there have been lawsuits claiming AI has reinforced paranoid beliefs.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And you may have heard, it very clearly contributed to a murder-suicide, but just to use the wording that they used here, that this chatbot allegedly validated and magnified each new paranoid belief of this distressed individual.
Interesting. And when we talk about like what's happened in 2025, I think this has been a big year for kind of deciding the direction that AI regulation is going to go. And there's obviously a difference between global regulation. I know the EU is kind of clamping down a little bit more on it than especially here in the US. Trump just recently came out and basically said, I don't know if it was an executive order. I don't have it in front of me. But the idea of it was, we are not going to allow states to decide their own regulations. It's going to be federal. And I think what that eventually is going to mean is whatever is good for Trump, he will allow them to do, right? Or however they lobby him, however they bribe him, he'll move that direction. He's basically saying it doesn't make sense if ChatGPT or OpenAI or whatever company or entity has to navigate 50 different sets of rules. We're not going to allow that. But it's just another example of him taking states' rights away, which is what his followers champion him for doing, or what they believe in that should be done, is that it should all be about states' rights. Instead, he's making the government bigger in this way, and he's doing it for the advantage of these very large companies, which are doing just an insane amount of damage to the environment.
Yeah, and there's other things at play as well. When you talk about like the government doing what's best for the government, I don't have any specific examples here, but this is an area that I had studied on a little bit earlier this year. There are some really scary things happening from like a government surveillance standpoint, and that kind of overlaps with like a government censorship, you know, standpoint. And then you combine that with the way that AI can be weaponized, whether by a government or by any entity, poses a really high cybersecurity risk. And then there are these like autonomous weapons. And in all of this, like part of what I brought up before about, you know, the complaints from those U.S. attorney general was to show that we don't really have any good way to enforce any sort of restrictions. And that's one thing that came up in like a big United Nations meeting. They were talking about autonomous weapons and how unregulated that is, like AI-driven military technology. What do we do about that?
My bingo slots for 2026. I talked about this last year. I did a whole thing where I actually shared my bingo, and I don't know if I'll do that this year or not, but my family does long shots, and we've put some rules around it this year. We put all like together some actual like parameters and point systems to see. And anyway, they have to be true long shots. But anyway, one of mine was at some point in 2026, there's going to be massive controversy over how AI is used in military systems, having access to nuclear codes, or an AI that uses facial recognition to fire a missile at someone in Venezuela, or Trump used ChatGPT to ask which country he should attack next, or something like that. But anyway, that's one of my 2026 line items.
When some of these technologies, these weapons, you can just set them and then they can go do their thing autonomously without needing any direct control, it can be very difficult to pinpoint who that attack came from.
Right.
Ukraine has used nearly 2 million drones, and 10,000 of those were AI enhanced.
Wow. 2 million drones?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
This isn't just a little bit of a step forward or step back, whatever you consider it, in, you know, military technology. there are analysts who have said that this will be as transformative and as unpredictable as like gunpowder or tanks were historically.
Wow.
Like it will completely change the way war is operated.
I remember when the Ukraine-Russia war started and seeing videos of drone attacks, and those are pretty gnarly. After watching a few of those, it was like, okay, I've seen enough. I know what they do. But I watched one recently that was a little different. And it was like they were shooting drones out of the sky from like forever away. And there was another where there were drones. This is crazy. There were drones taking out other drones. I think it was Ukrainian drones. We were seeing the footage of this drone in the sky torpedoing Russian drones that were getting ready to take off from the ground. And someone in the comments was like, so this is war now. It's the drone war. It literally is drones against people and drones against drones. But this war between Russia and Ukraine is really the first like large scale example of seeing the drone wars play out and what the future of war could be. It's pretty intense and terrifying. The thought of being hunted down by a drone is terrifying.
Oh, so terrifying. And like the barrier to entry here is so low,
mm-hmm.
right? We talked about Ukraine using 2 million drones.
Right.
You can't just gather up 2 million fighter jets. You can't. It's very difficult to gather 2 million humans to go fight. And in so many ways, like a simple little drone, which is much more cost effective, is also much more effective for the kind of war or the kind of tactics that are needed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can imagine Ukraine and Russia, like they're right there next to each other battling. But if you've got autonomous weapons, even if it is a whole bunch of drones that you fly over to a country and drop out of an airplane.
Yep.
And then they can...
Got a swarm now. Yeah. I've heard about the autonomous swarm fear. Because, yeah, right, you know, we're talking about... You said these were AI enhanced.
10,000 of them.
Yeah. 10,000 of them were AI enhanced. Doesn't necessarily mean completely autonomous. But to think of a future... Not too far ahead. We're probably already there as far as technology goes, and the military is probably very likely already there. That's just not deployed yet. But yeah, from seeing, like you're saying, these swarms or whatever it be, you know, they don't have to be little cheap drones either. Our military could afford $10,000, $20,000, $100,000 drones, $1 million drones that can do something similar. And maybe in Russia or Ukraine, these are drones that have a payload, and a lot of them are like kamikaze drones that blow themselves up on impact. And then, okay, you got to get another drone. Some of these drones are dropping munitions. And so if you could have drones that were reusable time and time again, that were dropping munitions and all of it completely autonomous. Yeah. Imagine dropping 1,000 drones out of a plane all at once, or sending them off of a ship or a border or whatever, and using facial recognition, go find your target. That is wild.
Yeah, and we're just talking about drones. Like everything the military has used up to this point, tanks, planes, whatever it may be, like could get to the point where it's autonomous. And then you think about like these humanoid robots, and I don't know if you've seen any of the videos with certain militaries, and they kind of showcase what these robots can, like the dog robot.
Right.
But like you strap a machine gun on one of these dog robots and it can get through just about any terrain. I mean, when you really start to think about it, the scope of what this will do to warfare is ludicrous. And our government is, if you've looked at what's been approved in the budget, it's not spending less, it's spending more. So I think we can anticipate more and more.
I wonder, this is just me speculating, I wonder if in the end, from a human toll, if it's better. Do we end up just having drones fighting each other? Do we end up having little military dogs fighting other little military dogs, and the battlefield is just full of like $1 trillion worth of weaponry, and it's a battle over whose force gets destroyed first, and you know what's left at the end of that? Or are these drones going to be, or these weapons in general, are they literally weapons of mass human destruction? I don't know.
Yeah, probably depends on the intent. Like if you are deploying these autonomous weapons to go cause as many casualties as possible, there's probably some very creative ways that they can do that. And maybe, you know, our defense systems will keep up with that. Maybe it is that there are trillions of dollars of broken drones on the battlefield, but then all the humans are starving because they spent all their resources.
Totally. Yeah, totally. No, I hate it.
We're talking about like guns and rockets and things like that. But some AI systems have demonstrated the capacity to generate detailed protocols for producing toxins or viruses, often exceeding the knowledge level of human experts. And now you don't even need to be an expert. Again, the barrier to entry is so low. As long as you have access to the right GPT or the right LLM. In one computational study, researchers found that AI models could generate thousands of novel toxic proteins and small molecules.
So this year we made an advancement in giving the average Joe the capability of creating like a bioweapon, basically.
Yep, exactly. So, I mean, this is an extreme way to frame it, an extreme parallel. But you can imagine if you just gave almost everybody in the world access to deploy a nuclear weapon, how long would we last?
If every single person had the option to fire a nuclear weapon, if everybody had one, we wouldn't last the day.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, like I said, that's an extreme example. But if all of a sudden, almost any bad actor in the world has access to be able to create a variety of different weapons. And in this case, we're talking about bioweapons.
Yeah. They at least have the knowledge. They might still have to gather the materials and know how to synthesize them and stuff, but they have the instruction manual in front of them.
Yeah. As long as you got some resources, all of a sudden you're a threat.
Yeah. Maybe you need $100,000 in resources or something, and you have to be good at being sneaky about it. But that's, I mean, yeah, maybe a couple grand is all it would take to create a weapon or whatever that could, a dirty bomb that could take out a city block.
And later we'll talk about some economic things, but I do just want to say related to AI, you know, these AI companies are leading the stock market in a really significant way.
They're owning the stock market.
Yeah. And if you look at the stock market, it looks like things have been pretty good.
Yeah.
But you remove the top like handful of companies.
Negative GDP. Talked
so
about that recently.
All of it is just banking on the continued success of these big AI companies.
Yeah, this AI conversation is hard. It's hard to really just talk about what happened this year because so much of it is really about what's coming. And that's the big question. And that's something we've talked about recently on daily episodes is what, is it going to succeed or is it going to flop? And if it flops, like economically, we're all screwed, right? It would cause a bubble and a chain reaction that would be catastrophic to the economy. If it succeeds, all the things that you're talking about, like we're not just talking about Sora getting better at making convincing videos, which in and of itself is a problem. My wife and I were just watching a video yesterday and she was like, is this AI? And I was like, I don't know. I'll just assume that it is, you know, and it was like an important video. It was like a news thing. And I was like, I hate that I can't just know if that's real or not. Anyway, but yeah, you're talking about all these threats and we haven't even scratched the surface in just this 10 minutes that we've been talking about it of like what AI pretty much can already do. And what they want it to be able to do as they continue this exponential increase in AI knowledge and application and the widespread access that they want people to have to it.
Yeah. So I didn't get much into the impacts on like mental health or even on our own independence and resiliency, like how much we're starting to depend on these AI tools. I didn't talk about the economic impacts in terms of like jobs, but we'll get to some of that a little bit later.
Okay. We have gone well beyond what these episodes normally go. So we'll stop this one here and we will pick up and do a part two tomorrow, I guess Monday, and maybe even a part three. We'll see where this takes us. So thanks for joining us today. We'll be back tomorrow with more.
Hey, Corey here. If you are listening to the back catalog of Breaking Down Collapse, thank you. Those episodes are so vital. They're so important. But I also wanted to let you know that I am now doing daily episodes. Yes, that's right. Here on the podcast, daily episodes. So if you are enjoying the back catalog, great. Please also feel free to zoom forward to the most recent episodes. Catch us daily. They are quick little episodes, and I think you'll enjoy them. Thanks.